Blog Talk Radio.
This is Doug Kelly, your host, here with my co-host and friend Grant Rubin Dunst. Hey, Grant.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. It's nice to have you with us tonight.
Yeah. It's been a cool day here in Florida, believe it or not.
Yeah, cool. It's supposed to be cool tonight. Yeah. I mean, we won't know how to act if the temperature drops below 90 degrees.
Well, a lot of things going on. I wanted to mention at the outset here, and I'll mention a couple of more times as we get through the show. Wanted to remind our audience, too, that last week we launched the Paranexus Registry of Anomalous Events. Excuse me. And it's at paranexus.net. Paranexus.net. If you're a paranormal researcher, you have events that you've gotten from research in the field, you can plug that in there, whether it's haunting, whether it's parapsychology, cryptozoology, and all of those. We'd love to hear about your cases, and we can get it into the database. That way we can cross-reference a lot of stuff. We can do search on different search options, find data, and have a good idea on what's going on. Maybe that will help us with some ideas, some concepts and get some knowledge in the field. So take a look at paranexus.net. That's the registry. Of course, the main website is paranexus.org. And I wanted to remind everyone, too, that we got less than 3 days coming up until the conference, the Paranexus Conference in Tampa on October 25th. We've been able to lower the fees due to the economy, which I call a depression, but I'm not going to go into that. So take a look at that at paranexus.org. And then another big announcement, we just are right at the point of launching a new website called Paranexus Academy, and that's at paranexusacademy.org. Now, this is a cool thing because we're going to be offering all kinds of classes that are very affordable, start out at $14, online classes, and we're inviting those who may have a class they'd like to teach to apply for as an instructor. If you've got a course you want to offer, and instructors can make a few extra bucks on the side. And it's really a great opportunity to learn a wide variety of different techniques and concepts and subjects really at an affordable rate. So that's at paranexusacademy.org. Brand new, just launched it, announced it today, and we're putting some finishing touches on it. So take a look at that. As far as tonight's guest, we have Jerry Avalos with us. Lucid dreaming and astral projection we're going to be talking about. Sounds like an interesting topic. I know I have some questions. I'll give you a little bit of background on Jerry. He grew up in the middle of Orange County, California, an earshot away from Disneyland. He was always an imaginative person and never seemed to turn that conscious creativity off, even while sleeping. Because of this, he had always had some level of control over his dreams. Growing up, Jerry realized his dreams to creatively solve problems, cram for tests, even predict the outcome of the next day while at school, while having a fun dream of playing a live-action version of one of his favorite video games. At age 10, he discovered what he had referred to as the infinite light within us all, that also seemed to open up a new level of astral control to him. Through dreams and understanding them, Jerry has learned how to overcome some serious conditions, including severe depression and a struggle with weight. In recent years, he has had visions past the enigmatic 2012 date, which is actually good to hear. Okay, I've got a lot of people Skyping me. I can't do anything about the breaking up. We'll just let that go. And I've got to read this and we'll get on to it. This is interesting. Using dreams, he's learned to overcome fears of all kinds by experiencing intense true-to-life lucid episodes where he's been shot, stabbed, set on fire, frozen, fell from heights, airplane crashes, car crashes, poisoned, died, squashed, choked, hung, etc. That's quite a laundry list. Also, through his astral travels, Jerry has also come in contact with types of entities such as ghosts, spirits, shadow people, demons, deities, even extraterrestrial and pan-dimensional beings. Now he uses his knowledge and techniques he's developed and learned to help others with self-discovery and empowerment. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you guys for having me.
So tell us more about how you got started with this whole thing. You kind of fill in some of those blanks.
Okay, because in a sense, I'm actually going back and trying to fill in those blanks myself because like in the bio, I had always had a certain level of control of my dreams, so I never even thought to look into what is lucid dreaming. It just wasn't clicking me. I just heard people talk about dreams, and I'm like, yeah, I have dreams too, and it kind of ended there. But I would notice, like, it would be the place where basically I would just have fun as a kid. I would do whatever I wanted to, go wherever I wanted to, and it was just normal life to me. And, you know, and what's interesting is, like, how when I mentioned the light incident, that happened in 1988, actually, and I found it's kind of, I hear a lot of other stories that seem to have a lot of incremental awakening, shall I say, to a lot of this, because for that experience with me, it really kind of, even at that young age, it kind of proved to me it's kind of like there's something else there, out there, that we don't know about, just from that experience itself, because I knew I was already experiencing conscious dreaming for, you know, as long as I can remember, so it wasn't a matter of, like, me knowing if I was asleep or not. So I knew I was asleep. I knew I couldn't die. I knew I can do all this stuff. I can get into this, I'll work into this, that experience a little later, but what I found, though, was essentially, it was, yeah, it's kind of the concepts that we hear people like Greg Braden talk about, and David Wilcock with that whole zero-point energy that is centered within us all, and it's the same concept. So basically, how I got to this point, though, was I had this constructive use of my dreams. Like, it was just kind of a tool that I used, like anyone else would use, just like their, you know, their time to think to themselves. That's kind of how I thought about it. And what happened was I started getting these dreams where, like, I couldn't even interpret them. And I was, you know, I came from the school of kind of thought of, you know, Carl Jung and even Freud to an extent. And, you know, some vague, you know, I guess wives' tales, I guess, or old tales that you'd hear of things like that before at this point. But so I take those into consideration, old, you know, urban myths and such. But I was good at figuring out what was going on, at least I thought I was, until I started seeing things like ETs and, you know, that weren't from my imagination. Or that, like, because a lot of times up to that point, like, entities kind of have this tendency to feel the same, you know, on that side. So I couldn't tell the difference between something living or dead or whatever then, because I thought it was just all in my mind. I thought I was just imagining it all. And I started following these things because essentially, like, I knew that, like, the precognitive sense that we have, it's nothing supernatural. We all do it all the time. It's just that some of us develop it more as just for our own reasons. You did it through dreams. And so you have this infinite processing power, you know, in your consciousness and subconsciousness and higher self, even. You have all of them aligned. You can just go anywhere, do everything, calculate anything. And so that's what I used it for. And here it was, it broke. I'm like, wait a minute, that can't happen. I'm just missing something here. I'm really missing something. And so from there, I started looking into more of, like, the esoteric interpretations of dreams, More than cutting edge research on dreams too, or dream interpretations. It talked bordered into astral projection and things like that, and out of body experiences. And then I started reading books on lucid dreaming. But when I was reading these things, I'm going like, I've done that. I've done that too. I've used it for that. You should do, but you shouldn't do that one when you're too drunk. I'm like, whoa, what's going on here? You know, this, like, because I was, at one point, I was pretty much like a materialist reductionist. You know, it was kind of like everything came down to chemicals, like causality, if you will. And I was like, you know, but then this stuff came along, and I'm like, uh-oh, wait a minute. I'm really, really vastly wrong here. And then from there, it just snowballed. And I started, after that, I started having more ET dreams. And I would say the one that really kind of kicked me over the edge, when I'm like, okay, there's something really very, very intensely odd going on, was like, this is basically what happened. I was dreaming. I was kind of, we all go through this phase at night where we kind of index our previous day while we're dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of doing that. And you can watch that if you want to. And so I wasn't really watching it, but I kind of woke up in that indexing phase. And I'm like, why am I in this indexing phase? And I started getting pulled into what I call the void. A lot of people call the void, just the black, you know, nothing. And I started hearing music, like orchestral, big orchestral music. And I'm like, okay, I'm having this dream. And all of a sudden, like, my consciousness is starting to be hazily put into this body running. And I can see there's a bunch of ETs everywhere. EBEs, they're kind of tan-skinned, big black eyes. They weren't like the grays or the reptilians, like they said, they were something else. And it was like a fight. It was like the United States, I was like in a United States kind of outfit of some kind. I'd never seen it before. I could tell the body that it was in was slightly older, maybe like 5 years, 5-6 years. And I was using some kind of psychic push thing. And now I've, because I've just done this dreaming thing so long, I have a way of checking, like, what reality I'm in and what rules I can break and use and do different things in. And I'm
all
like,
right.
Whoa, this is...
Let me ask you some questions to kind of get a feel for how it kind of works. Okay, so you've been doing this since about 10 years old, right?
I would say 10 years old is really when the most intense traveling started happening. But I also have a lot of blocks, which I'm trying to work on, and I know I put them there for some reason, so I don't know.
Okay, so I mean, how often do you go out and about?
It's kind of like I have to have a reason, like a target, because, like, for instance, like, a lot of people, like, you know, instantly in these circles, they'll be like, well, why don't you project to the moon and go find out what's there, go project to Mars. It's like, well, would it matter what I say if I did that? Would it really kind of bring any proof to anyone? And it's kind of like, I don't need it anymore, because I remember just going there and having fun with a lot of different things this whole time, but I thought it was in my head. I didn't know it was real. So it's like, I can say, yeah, there's probably stuff there. But it's like,
how do you differentiate, Jerry, between the lucid dreaming and the astral projection?
I guess the projection would be more of kind of like you're trying to bring out some kind of real world reference or some kind of like point reference. So like astral projecting, we can do that in a very universal term. For instance, like sometimes we all have dreams about common things like being in a hotel. Okay, if for, you know, for whatever reason, oh, this happened in a hotel, or I went to this hotel, and hotels, because they have so many doors and windows and this and that, that generally kind of symbolizes a time and place of choice, and a coming and going of visitors, vacation, such, and so all of, and the way the subconscious basically talks to us, it's all associative. So anything associated with any of those concepts that I just talked about can be your link to this projected concept, but essentially it's a point within the collective consciousness, if that makes sense.
Okay, so are you saying that you kind of just know the difference?
There's some sensations that I can go into, but it's kind of, they'll probably be just as cryptic. But there is checks that you can do that kind of let you know where you're at. Because, like, for instance, a lot of it too is your point of view. Because if you're like, well, I don't know, this is what I term it, full lucid, which is basically like how you and me are talking right now. We have a consciousness which sees in a body, and, you know, we have, that's it. But then there's also other forms of lucidity, because you can be watching that body doing that. You can be watching someone else doing whatever you want. So that's also, but if you don't have a body per se, then the astral projection would come in when you maybe do have a projected body in a location.
And is it tethered?
What's that, I'm sorry?
Is it tethered? Silver,
you know,
cord?
I've never seen any kind of cord. I've never seen anything like that. It's not to say that I can't say for a fact, yes, it exists, no, it doesn't, but I know that there is something that always allows us to kind of blink out, get out, for the most part. You know, as long as we have our mind in the right spot. If you're operating in fear while you're there, just like, you know, in your waking life, you're going to make bad decisions. You know, you're not going to remember, I have the eject button, so to speak, you know what I mean? And you always have that eject button there, so...
All right, well, let me ask you this. Let's from everything you just said, let's break it down to try to simplify, because we're getting some questions in the chat room. What's the difference between lucid dreaming and astral projection? And then another one to define the terms of lucid dreaming and astral projection. So essentially, if you could kind of boil it down to its base differences, what's the difference in the two?
All right, that's actually a fairly tall order for a guy, but I'll do it. You know, lucid dreaming, like if you want to give it a blanket statement, I kind of just say conscious dreaming, because there's different ways of being conscious that you're dreaming. That's where a lot of the books don't go into, a lot of the esoteric teachings don't go into. They just don't mention it. That's how astral projection and even deep meditation and visions start falling into the same category, because scientifically we're in the exact same state of mind, or, you know, the exact same brain activity is going on as you would be sleeping, as opposed to just sitting and meditating and going very, very deep into theta, you know,
So that's lucid dreaming. So lucid dreaming is you're in a dream state, but you still kind of have the awakening consciousness of sorts?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay.
And astral projection? Astral projection would be more of, this is where you kind of communicate more. Because, like, for instance, you can build your own dream, and you can just build your dream, and you can have fun in your dream, do whatever you want. But then you can also communicate. That's the weird thing. How do I know this? Because I've had numerous experiences where, like, I meet people, like, in my dreams before I actually meet them in my waking life. Or, you know, actually just recently this week, me and my wife actually had a shared dream. You know, we were able to describe everything that was going on and everything, you know, and, oh yeah, you saw this? Yeah, I did. And that's been known to happen, you know, and so to do that, you have to be projecting into kind of a more collective consciousness. Like I said, you have to be kind of attached to whatever, you know, what this whole globe basically essentially calls, or even this universe calls reality somehow, to interact, have feedback. And in dreamland, so to speak, or the astral plane, you can kind of tell. I know that's one question a lot of people are going to ask right away: is the eyes? Look in the eyes. If you, you'll see what you're talking to, or it will mm-hmm. block you. So.
Okay. So
when you decide that you're going to do some astral projection, do you meditate before you do the astral projection? And when you actually do, now my concept of astral projection, and I think maybe some of the folks in the audience might have a tendency to agree with me, is that that you consciously, it's kind of like remote viewing, except you can actually transport either your spirit or your whatever, your consciousness, to a certain site. So what do you do if you, let's say you consciously want to astrally project. How do you prepare yourself for that? Do you do anything special? And tell us a little bit about some of the places, the most interesting places that you've astrally projected yourself to.
I guess to prepare for it, it really comes down to focus. So whatever one's means of focusing is, you know, that's the main thing. So, like, for instance, if I want to find out, you know, what's for myself, you know, what's going on, you know, in the deserts of New Mexico, I have to be thinking about it. Or I can, and make it a lot easier. You know, this is where it differs from remote viewing, because remote viewing is was actually a term that was specifically coined by, you know, basically in the United States government, you know, Joseph McGarnacle, you know, with the psychic spies and was Operation Grill Flame. And they went through this procedure of kind of no front loading, as they call it, no information beforehand, you kind of say, and then you're able to do reconnaissance remotely. That's more of technically what the term of remote viewing is. Astral projection is kind of more of like,
I'm just going to say, okay, let's go back to the question for just a second, and that way we can kind of keep it in pieces. So first of all, what do you do to prepare to do astral projection?
Okay, let's just say for example, I want to go to Stonehenge. Okay, and I want to see what Stonehenge is about, and you know, and maybe even see it through time, because this is a great thing about astral projection—we can see through time as well. You know, you basically what I would recommend is do research on Stonehenge, or just look at pictures of Stonehenge, and just like it'd be fun. You can do as much as you want throughout the day. Basically, how it's about indexing phase of your dream state. You express the intention of wanting to wake up to go there by doing that, expressing it during your waking life.
First key is intention. You get the intention. You figure out where you want to go. Then what do you do beyond that?
This depends on the person and the experience. But one way that you can do this one way, you know, you can meditate on. You know, any way you want to get there. You can literally get there any way. You can fly, you can drive, you can teleport. So just however your mind wants to get there. You have to build this trip, essentially. Build it in your mind if with the you know, meditation technique, or if you want to write it down. Because this is part of the manifestation of into reality, to kind of help bridge it, to synchronize it to where, you know, because essentially you are going into that time-space-space-time flip. And, you know, it's kind of a weird place, and you can.
Okay.
So
basically, so far we have intention. You intend to go to a place, and then you think about how you would like to go. But astral projection, I mean, are you really driving? Are you really, you know what I mean? I mean, isn't that by definition, you know, you're flying in the astral plane, so to speak?
You can.
Is that how?
There really is no definition there. Cause that's one thing that I find, honestly, with a lot of what we've been told, actually what I've been seeing, is like it's just not right. Because over there, there's no rules. There's none. So you can do anything. As long as if you have the full consciousness, you can change anything you want.
How do you know that's not lucid dreaming versus astral projection?
Basically, because there you'll get a resistance. And by resistance, I mean you'll get pushed out of that state. So, like, for instance, if you have built to dream to have fun, let's say you just saw, you know, an action movie, you know, I would really like to play this action movie, the star in this action movie. And you do that, you'll have full control of it if you're conscious, you know, of the fact that you're in the movie and you're making it. You can stop time, you can throw things, you can do this and that, and you won't even have to think. It's just before you even think about it, usually. It'll just be done, and because your mind is that strong, But now, if you're out somewhere, you'll get, like, a sort of resistance, because you'll have to be focused. You'll have to really have to focus on that intention. The intention is a really important thing there, because that's one reason why, you know, remote viewing and stuff like that, it is perfected, because you can't hide. You can't hide anywhere. So the more focused the intention is, the less resistance you'll get, and the more kind of ultimately power to do what you want on the astral plane you'll achieve.
Well, let me ask you this. As part of your intention preparing for astral projection, do you do any kind of meditation or?
Yeah, well, actually, I do some. This is a big one.
He said, do. That was a joke, man. You can laugh at it.
Yeah, that was good.
You must laugh at all my jokes. That's kind of a rule. You come on, I say something, you have to laugh, because that's part of the deal here.
I can agree with that. That works. That
okay.
works for me.
All right, so I'm sorry to get off track, dude. Okay, so in addition to intention, what do you do meditatively
prepare? Check that intention. You check that intention. Ask yourself why you want to do this. That's a very important thing. Most people don't do that. Even why they want to project in the first place. Why do you even want to do it? You know, because essentially what it boils down to is like you're reading energies you're sending sometimes even your essence to somewhere else. But essentially our physical body is in one place. So you know we have to remember that. You know, at least for the most part. You know, the majority of the time.
Hey guys, we got a question from the chat room. And Enlightened One in the chat room wants to ask you, Jerry, is there time in the astral world and when focusing where you want to go, could you just be there or does it take seconds, minutes? What's the time frame? So let's assume you're sitting down, you're starting your meditation, you already know your destination, okay, and you start meditating and focusing on where you want to go. How long does it take you before you can get yourself into that transcendental state where you're actually, projecting?
Okay. Well, one thing too is as far as getting there meditatively, that's a really difficult way, quite honestly. And if you do it that way, you're essentially walking yourself through different dimensional states in a sense, and your that third eye is going to be open. You're going to see everything. What was the question again? I kind of sidetracked there.
Well, basically, the question was, the enlightened one in the chat room wants to know, how is there time when you actually are astral projecting? Do you have a consciousness of time?
Oh, okay, I'm sorry, that's right, the time thing. Yeah, because there, time is vastly different. It actually is kind of like pretty much non-existent, or it's like flipped. So the mode of transit is really just up to you. So like within your mind, and sometimes it's a surprise to us. We don't even know. It's kind of like, you might just, even if you do meditate, you're meditating there, and then all of a sudden you might, quote unquote, wake up, your eyes might open, and you might be in Stonehenge like we're talking about. All of a sudden, just bam.
So tell me, have you gone back to Stonehenge yourself?
Have I actually done it? Actually, not that I recall. Actually, I don't think I've ever done that. Maybe I should try
that. Tell me about some of the places. Some of the places where you've gone.
Let's hold that question until after the break, if we could. That's a good question, and we're getting down to the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a short break, folks, so appreciate everyone tuning in. If you would hang with us, we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, this is Doug Kelly, founder of the Spirit Team. We perform professional paranormal research and investigations at no charge to you. If you are experiencing mysterious events in your home or business, please contact us. We maintain your privacy and we won't think you're crazy. And if you're a paranormal researcher, we offer an accredited certification course that will enhance your knowledge of the paranormal field and raise credibility with your clients. For more information, please visit our website at spiritteam.org. That's spiritteam with one T, .org.
Is there a suppression of UFO and alien information by our government.
Does the soul continue on after we die?
Climb aboard the black ship of Paranormal Radio with your host, Captain Jack, on Contact Talk Radio and KRWM 106.9 FM HD3. Or visit WBRTRadio.com for more information.
Where will you find a professional association of paranormal researchers?
Paranexus.org.
Where can you get research training, share data, and network with other researchers?
Paranexus.org.
Where will you find a set of international standards for paranormal research groups?
Paranexus.org.
Paranexus is a global professional association of progressive paranormal investigators, parapsychologists, cryptozoologists, ufologists, and psychically gifted individuals focused on understanding the human condition through the scientific study of paranormal and psychical phenomena. And coming October 2008 to Tampa, Florida, the Paranexus Conference, a learning and networking event unlike any you've attended. Join us for two full days of innovative paranormal workshops. Participate in the Paranexus Challenge, where several teams will investigate a secret haunted location. Observe a live table-tipping seance at the stroke of midnight. Join us for the Spirits and Shadows Costume Ball. See old friends, meet new friends, win prizes, and have fun.
Paranexus.org.
A place to learn, a place to share, a place to network, a place to come together. Join us now at Paranexus.org. And welcome back, everybody. Doug Kelly here and with Grant, my good friend. Hey, Grant.
Hey, Doug. Hey, welcome, everybody.
Hey,
good to have you with us tonight.
Yes, it is. And we're talking with our guest, Jerry Avalos, talking about astral projection, lucid dreaming, that sort of thing. Welcome back, Jerry. Appreciate you being with us. So for the first half hour, let's try to see if we can summarize a couple of things here. As far as the difference between lucid dreaming and astral projection, could you put that in, you know, just a short paragraph? Just how do you know, or do you just know?
Okay, if you just want lucid dreaming, like I said, is just being conscious of your dreams, that you are dreaming, or basically that you're dreaming. So anytime that you know that you're not in your waking state, lucid dreaming, you just fall into that category because there really isn't anything really solid that transcends one way or another.
Okay.
Projection is more of like connecting to the universe, shall I say.
Okay.
Where you're interacting with energies and information that don't necessarily originate from you. So you're actually feeding that off of a different of this information layer that everyone's trying to find, basically.
Okay. All right. So now the next summarization question is, oh, God, it's fleeting my mind now. All right, the next one is preparation. Okay, so we discussed how intention is important. You need to have the intention. Yeah, I'd like to go to Mars. Yeah, I'd like to go to Stonehenge. Yeah, I'd like to go to Machu Picchu. So we've got intention down, and then you also mentioned how you focus your mind on the act of getting there or of just going there,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. If that's a question in your mind, address it. Basically, address your own questions in your mind and answer them, because you essentially create this perceived reality. So, so if that mode of transit is a big one, actually, because a lot of people have asked me that. How do you travel? Well, like I said, you can use a car, you can run, you can fly, you can create portals, and all this other stuff. It's really not bound by any laws of any, you know, writings anywhere. So basically, that's why I said about the meditation isn't the Zen meditation of clearing your mind. It's more of locking into a subject and pondering possibility on the subject and identifying the one that you like, that you prefer. So that process is up to, you know, whoever wants to do it. But at the same time, yeah, there's ways you can do that. I suggest a list. You know, where do I want to go? How will I get there? How long will I stay? When do I want to see? Do I want to see now, or do I want to see, you know, when the Druids were there? Things like that.
So time travel. Okay. Do you? Here's a question from the chat room. Do you, when you do lucid dreaming, do you ever wake up tired?
You can if you let yourself fall into that trap. Yeah, if you let yourself think that you are tired, because you don't get you know your consciousness is a never-ending spring of energy. So if we perceive our mind being tired, then we will be tired. But there's nothing that you can do there that will make you wake up physically tired unless you make it you make it reality. Does that make sense?
Okay. So now let's talk about some of the most interesting places you've been in terms of astral projection,
you know,
and who you might have met along the way.
Oh, wow. Okay. I actually tend to keep most of my projections, you know, local for one reason or another. I just kind of like, me personally, I love just running around, actually. You'll find me just running over the United States, over the world. Just the speed alone, it's just like, I just love just doing that. It's just, it's beautiful. You have this hyper color, hyper reality. But I say some of the stuff that I like to save once in a while, I just love doing it. I haven't done it for a while. Maybe this talk will inspire me to try to build this up, you know, the courage to do this again. But there's just go out in space and just look at, you know, all the galaxies. I remember specifically doing that a lot when I was younger.
Okay.
And that's one thing. I actually put this warning in to everyone who's listening. This stuff can be obscenely fun, addictively fun, to where you kind of just want to sleep. So you got to make sure that doesn't happen, because it becomes hyper reality. It's almost better than reality. You're like, oh, why would I even want to wake up? You know. So very important to keep yourself grounded. So.
Okay. So what would you say is the most interesting place, the most eventful, or, you know, somebody says, where you been? What's the first one that comes to mind, the most dramatic, exciting, eventful experience?
Well, honestly, like, I'm not really sure how much we want to get into it, but one of the one that really sticks out in my mind was a recent one that had basically the newspaper kind of told me, like, oh, yeah, you kind of got some information, too, where you're at. And it was a massive base, actually.
Really?
Yeah, and it was like it was some kind of. It reminded me of like the big tunnel you see in the movie Transformers. When you're walking down.
Yeah.
And I was kind of walking, and I saw basically. I just felt like I was in a different body. Actually, it was kind of weird. And but I saw this symbol of this thing being brought out. It was some kind of craft. You know, it was a, you know, spacecraft of some kind, and everyone kind of knew it was a semi-sham sort of thing, but everyone applauded anyways, and so I'm walking down this, I'm like, wow, that's kind of interesting, because it's transmorphing in front of me, and while I'm doing it, I'm slowing down, the people behind me say, hey, watch out, and I look to the side of me, and it's 5 nuclear weapons, and I'm like, wow, where are those going? And so
wow.
This goes down, this goes further, but this basically what happened here, this is when we lost those nukes over America. This was that time, and that was that thing, that ship was the, I forgot the exact name, but it's like the XJ something or other. It was NASA's test flying it out of Vandenberg that day.
Okay.
And stuff like that. And so that's kind of a functional one. That's one that's honestly on my mind right now, because, you know, everyone's really, really concerned about, you know, what's going on in the world right now. And
well, what kind of, have you had any contacts with interdimensional beings or extraterrestrials?
Yeah, actually the extraterrestrial one, actually one of the ones that was very interesting, to let you know that they're not all bad things, really. Okay, how I said, I love running around. So I was just running around town, literally. I was just running through the hills in one of the canyons nearby. I'm running, and I'm looking into the side of me, and there's an alien, an ET. And I'm like, holy crap, there's an alien. And he's just like, yeah, Jerry, don't kill me. What do you want? And I'm like, don't kill, dude, I'm not going to kill you. I thought we went over this. And he's just like, yeah, fine, what do you want? And I'm like, I didn't know, because it looked like he was in the middle of something. And I'm just like, I was just running around playing. So I'm like, play? And he made this big tidal wave. And he looked at me. I looked at him, and he's just like, yeah. And I'm like, okay. Well, I just jumped in and went along with it. But and it was interesting because I know I could have asked him all these things, like, oh, you know, what are you guys doing? Where did you come from? But I knew he was a gray. I knew he was a gray alien that everyone talks about, these robotic, semi-robotic guys that fly around and do their various deeds. I don't necessarily know their agenda, but I know that I can tell that they're everywhere doing a lot of different things.
Are you talking about during your astral projection, they're around?
I've seen them different places, yeah. And actually, I've talked to some regressionists. I haven't actually had a regression myself yet, but I've given them some of my some of these visions, and they're like, yeah, you might have been looked at there a little bit a couple of times. I've had little quick awakenings where I wake up and I see this little alien in a suit walking towards me, and I'm just like, oh, hey, this is where they
do
whatever they do.
Top.
So no, I mean not like a suit, like almost like a hazmat suit or something.
Cool.
So it was very clinical in a sense. And,
so do you feel like you've been abducted by them, or?
Honestly, at this point, it would make a lot of sense. I don't know for sure. It would seem that maybe, I don't rule it out, especially from what I hear and how similar some of my experiences have been compared to other people's. And I wouldn't doubt it. I don't have the confirmation of that. But yeah, it doesn't freak me out one way or another, to be honest with you. It's kind of like, you know. But yeah, I wouldn't doubt it, especially just from what I've seen too with actually I had the really interesting experience a couple of months ago where I kind of woke up and saw this etheric sort of entity floating in front of me, working on me or something, and I don't know what it was doing because I can only wake up so much. And I was just like, and it kind of stopped, like literally was like, uh-oh, am I in trouble? And I'm just kind of like, I remember it wasn't worried about me or something, but then, but what was interesting is, like, I remember hearing this voice, too, that said something about snap to lines. I have no idea what that means. But then I'm just like, okay, I'll go back to sleep because this thing looks like it's very frightened. So, you know.
Okay. Well, have you ever done any, other off-world excursions from... during astral projection?
None that I can remember right now. I tend to stay at
How about, have you seen any other astral projectors, for lack of a better term?
Yeah.
You see other people doing it?
Oh, yeah, I've met other, I think they're called Anaranauts, I think is the term that's coined for the people who are able to interact on the astral plane, if you will.
Plane? Okay.
And yeah, it's pretty interesting. It's really cool, actually. It's one of the, like I said, it's hyper real. So it's like having this hyper real social interaction episode, essentially. And it could be anything as long as you kind of you collectively keep a focus. That's the whole other subject that you can go off on too. Because the more consciousness you have around you, the more stable the scene comes. It's almost like together we can create a stable scene there. You know,
mm-hmm.
association. So that's why I say it's like powerful stuff like hotels and, you know, famous landmarks and things like that. It's probably another reason why a lot of people have a lot of success going to those, because there's just so much consciousness and energy kind of hanging around those places.
So what do these other people look like when you're on the astral plane?
They generally just look like them. At least the way I see them. You can project anything, but usually if you have a certain level of consciousness, you can kind of tell, like it doesn't look quite right. Someone's projecting something else, and you can use the eyes and look into them. The reason why I say that is because if we give in to fear there, just look into the eyes and you'll see who's talking to you, and you can, you know. So, but yeah, they look like any just near you or basically your true form. That was one thing. I've met people before. I've talked to them and I'd ask them, like especially even online, I'd be like, hey, do you look like this by chance? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So I met you before I met you. That's kind of neat. And I have a group of friends that we've been noticing this. Actually, we met synchronistically online, and we've been having these experiences and of meeting people before we meet them, or just various dream experiences, and we've actually been actually trying to sync up to kind of create a shared dream, to kind of just do it. And but it's just attaining a certain level of lucidity to kind of do the shared thing is very difficult, or it's spontaneous. So. Kind of,
okay. There's a question in the chat room. How does this compare with an out-of-body experience? Grant, you're into that sort of thing. The out-of-body experience is really connected with near-death experiences, aren't they, or some sort of a trauma? Or what do you think?
Some people have had them without being in a near-death state. The ones that I find most interesting, of course, as you well know, are the ones that are associated with near-death conditions. And I'm sure our audience knows, and perhaps even Jerry, you're familiar with this, there's a lot of new research that's going on right now, right here in the United States, I believe, where what the experiments that they've done, this will probably resonate with you, Jerry, is that in some emergency rooms, one of the things that they've decided to do is put kind of like scrolling marquees on the ceiling in areas where only a person could see from a certain vantage point, and they would have to be actually out of their body to see it. So as far as I know, those experiments have not yielded much in the way of anybody, you know, bringing back information about the marquees, but who knows? The research is relatively new at this point, so... So does that have any bearing on some of the experiences you've had, Jerry?
Actually, yeah. And the only reason why I even consider some of the stuff out of body experience is because I've had a real time out of body experience, which was very strange. And because, like I said, I do have a high level of lucidity, and basically it was so two of my friends were disagreeing. Or, you know, have an argument, and I knew they were going to argue, you know what I mean? So even in my dream state, I started seeing this dream version, and I'm like, I don't want to see this, and I kind of tried to move it aside. But it was like, no, you're going to see it. And then what essentially happened is my consciousness essentially just kind of enters the room through this point of light, and I'm seeing and hearing everything they're saying. I'm seeing where they're standing and all this other stuff, and they weren't standing in their usual spots and all this other stuff, and I'm like, well, I don't want to see this, so I'm going to wake up. So I woke up, and they're at my house. I was taking a nap. They're helping me do some housework. And I walk outside, and, you know, sure enough, they're in the same spots, you know, talking about exactly what I've seen. And I'm just like, either, no matter what, because I admittedly said I knew this was going to happen. A lot of dreams and stuff, but it was a very, very, very accurate guess to put them exactly where they were. And doing, you know what I mean, things like that. I'm like, wow.
Are you familiar with are you familiar with hyperspace, or the difference between the astral plane and hyperspace?
It depends. I'm not sure what you're talking about hyperspace, but I know that there's definitely different dimensions and levels. Yeah, so astral plane.
Okay, that's one of our After Dark radios mentioning that in the chat room. Astral plane is that area between physical and hyperspace. Hyperspace is pure mind and pure energy. So didn't know if you had anything on that. If somebody wanted to, what would you recommend? If somebody wanted to really get into this or try doing it, any do's and don'ts?
Oh, yeah. First thing, number one, no matter how advanced of a dreamer you are, and if you don't have a journal, get one. You have to have a journal. And don't wait to write anything down. Even if you really have to go to the bathroom or something, write it down first or take it with you, because these memories will fade really fast. Even the most vivid ones, sometimes you'll wake up and you'll be like, I know I just dreamt the most vivid, cool thing in the world, but I cannot remember it. So it doesn't really matter one's level of perception. You know, just have the dream journal, number one. Number two, like I said, intention plays a big thing, so express intention to want to dream more if you don't dream at all, or to remember any dreams if you don't dream at all. That's the first step that I think I see a lot of people, like, they want to do this, but they don't even have, their dreaming isn't even common to them, so they have to get to the point where they're at least seeing these weird symbols and stuff. They have absolutely no idea, you know, why a garden gnome that was glowing green just jumped across their living room in their dream. You know what I mean? Just see that, you have to see that first before you can really get out and have control everywhere else. So just, you know, really expressing the intention with that. And actually, I do have a statement or that you can work off of, actually, that and change what you want, that will help the subconscious remember dreams. It's one I kind of give people. Put things in a present tense, because in that plane, time doesn't matter the same way it does here, so everything is now. So you have to remember that. But before you go to sleep, or even just write it or something like that in your day, this is the statement that I like giving is, I remember my dreams and I feel rested and energized. Just kind of get that going.
Sure, personal affirmations, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so
self-talk.
And that way, even that you avoid that I'm tired from my lucid experience. You have that built in that, no, this is my mind, and my mind was just, you know, being efficient with its time, really. Because you can use lucid dreams to do anything, including study for tests, you know, practice, you know, a skill. If you're consciously aware of it, you can create the own boundaries of that lucid experience to find yourself to what you believe is reality. So no telekinesis if you can't do it. No anything else if you can't do it. And just practice, you know, things like that. Or you can,
mm-hmm.
you know, stuff like that. It's just very effective tool.
You alluded to earlier in the program, you alluded to fear when on the astral plane, right? So did you talk about a fear? Well, here's the question in the chat room is, when astral projecting, there's a vibration sensation in your body, often creates fear in us. How to get rid of this fear?
In a sense, you kind of have to just look through it, know that, feel this. Just don't resist. Because if you resist, you're basically pushing yourself out of that state. This is a new state of consciousness basically kind of happening. So you have to just let it pass like a wave. Because I think the people who experience this will know what I'm talking about, where it feels like a wave. It's like you have that, and it's like it's over. And so it's weird. It's definitely weird. And it's one of the hardest things, too, to go from I'm breathing, I don't have to breathe anymore. That's another thing. If one of the other ways that you can get into lucidity is to walk yourself to sleep and kind of remain conscious the whole time, which is one of the hardest ways, and that's kind of one of the meditative ways too. But yeah, you'll get that whole buzzing, the tone maybe too, the very that real loud one. And yeah, if it's an intense thing, so if it's something that shocks you or alarms you or has that fear, it's going to give you resistance, and resistance is going to push you out of that state. So.
Okay. Well, cool. That's great. So now you have some websites, don't you?
Yeah, I have a couple of websites. I just started
I was going to let you know that we have bookmarked or linked your site, one of their sites, the one you sent to me, on your on Paranexus, so people can go to paranexus.org, look at the, actually, if you go to paranexusradio.org, it'll take you right to the page, and you can click on Jerry's program and his website there. But go ahead and what do you got on them, and what some different things that you have, some videos and so forth that people can learn a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm just starting it, so I'm kind of just establishing basically who I am with some of these stories. You know what I mean, of what I've done, because I do have some interesting stories, but they're very rich. So I could take up most of the time just retelling some of these. So that's what I'm doing with this website, is putting that. And then the next one I'm going to be doing is going to be specifically addressing how to interpret the dream sign, the symbols that we see. Because most of us don't see in imagery that we can recognize readily. So there's a whole thing of interpreting the imagery to be able to kind of get out and really start interacting and all this other stuff. So that's like a whole discipline in itself. And then, of course, I'll be talking more about some of the 1-2-3s, or a couple of 1-2-3s, and writing these down that I kind of talked about as far as attaining lucidity and working into it. Because there is another technique, too, that I like using with people, and it's building a simple dream sign. Dream construct, a very simple one. So that way it gives you a chance to recognize that you're dreaming, things like that. So.
Well, great. Well, visit paranexusradio.org, and I'll take you right to the schedule page of Paranexus. And you click on Jerry's link there. You'll see it in the schedule. And his website's right there and linked there. And he's got some different videos and so forth. And what we're going to do is we're going to take a break here in just a minute or two. And when we come back, we're going to continue the discussion. We're going to go off in a little bit of a different direction, but a related direction. And we're going to talk about NDEs, or near-death experiences, which is similar in some regard to what we're talking about here in this first segment. We're going to also talk about the pathology, the psychology of some of this stuff, too, how it might interact and play a part and so on and so forth. And if you in the audience have an experience such as an NDE, near-death experience, out-of-body experience, and you'd like to talk about it, we'd love to hear from you. You can call in the call-in number there. It's on your screen at 347-945-7799. You can also post questions in the chat room as you've been doing, and we appreciate that as well. Jerry, we really appreciate you taking your time and joining us tonight. Some interesting experiences sound like you've had.
Yeah, thank you guys again for having me, and I just enjoy sharing, really, and look forward to doing it more, really.
Yeah, sounds good.
Nice having you, Jerry. Thank you so very much.
And to our listeners, hang tough with us. We'll be back in just a moment with more on Paranexus Universe.
Hi, this is Doug Kelly, founder of the Spirit Team. We perform professional paranormal research and investigations at no charge to you. If you are experiencing mysterious events in your home or business, please contact us. We maintain your privacy, and we won't think you're crazy. And if you're a paranormal researcher, we offer an accredited certification course that will enhance your knowledge of the paranormal field and raise credibility with your clients. For more information, please visit our website at spiritteam.org. That's spiritteam with one T, .org.
Is there a suppression of UFO and alien information by our government? Does the soul continue on after we die? Climb aboard the black ship of paranormal radio with your host, Captain Jack, on Contact Talk Radio and KRWM 106.9 FM HD3. Or visit WBRTRadio.com for more information.
Where will you find a professional association of paranormal researchers?
Paranexus.org.
Where can you get research training, share data, and network with other researchers?
Paranexus.org.
Where will you find a set of international standards for paranormal research groups?
Paranexus.org.
Paranexus is a global professional association of progressive paranormal investigators, parapsychologists, cryptozoologists, ufologists, and psychically gifted individuals focused on understanding the human condition through the scientific study of paranormal and psychical phenomena. And coming October 2008 to Tampa, Florida, the Paranexus Conference, a learning and networking event unlike any you've attended. Join us for two full days of innovative paranormal workshops. Participate in the Paranexus Challenge, where several teams will investigate a secret haunted location. Observe a live table-tipping seance at the stroke of midnight. Join us for the Spirits and Shadows Costume Ball. See old friends, meet new friends, win prizes, and have fun.
Paranexus.org.
A place to learn, a place to share, a place to network, a place to come together. Join us now at Paranexus.org.
We'll be right back. sky. It's Paranexus Universe.
And we're back. Welcome back, everybody. This is Doug Kelly with Grant Rubendunst. We were talking about out-of-body, well, astral projection, lucid dreaming with Jerry Avalos, our first hour guest. And we want to continue that discussion in just a few minutes. A couple of other things we want to touch on, as I had mentioned at the beginning of the last hour, that just wanted to remind our listeners and our Paranexus members that last week we launched the Paranexus Registry of Anomalous Event. And what it is a database that people can submit sighting reports, and it covers all the fields, ufology, cryptozoology, parapsychology, alien abductions, and so on and so forth. And we're trying to build a database of the different facts surrounding some of these events, see if we can find some connections. Now, a lot of paranormal researchers have been talking about sharing information, and that's a good thing, and this is really the opportunity to do that. So take a look at paranexus.net. Now, the .net is the registry. The main website for Paranexus is paranexus.org. Paranexus.net is the registry where you can submit a sighting report. You don't even have to be a member to do that. If you are an active Paranexus member, you can also register to be what we call on the site as an agent, and that's somebody who can submit these reports directly to the database. There's a lot of information that can go into that, and you can search among various fields, which makes a bit unique. You can search through commonalities between ufology, cryptozoology, hauntings, parapsychology, etc. So it's a pretty powerful database. Another thing I wanted to mention that we just announced today in the newsletter is another new site called ParanexusAcademy.org. And this is going to be an incredible site, a learn site. We're going to be offering a variety of courses in the paranormal field, about everything you can imagine. We're looking for instructors who want to make a few bucks on the side, teach a course, looking for knowledgeable instructor, people who have some little bit of experience, have a message to share, have some training to do. The courses are very, very affordable, starting out at $14 for a course. And we really are looking for people who want to teach. We've got a couple up there. In fact, I just added the new CFPI course, the Certified Founding Paranormal Investigators course. It's on a structured basis here. It's going to be over 10 weeks. So if you've been waiting for that course, this is the first place you can take it until it's formally released here in the next few weeks. I also have the Certified Paranormal Investigator course there, the CPI. The difference in this one is that it's just a structured learning environment. Some of the different activities that are involved in this online learning include written assignments. It also includes webinars, chat sessions, and a host of other activities. Brand new site, ParanexusAcademy.org. Hope you'll take a look, and if you want to teach a course, there's information there that will show you how to go about that. So take a look at that. Now, Grant, last week we had an amazing show, actually, didn't we?
Oh, absolutely. It was wonderful to have the folks in Project Camelot on. We got a lot of response from our audience, and you know, we're really interested to see what our audience thought about it. And you know, for some of the folks that you know, may have heard from friends, you know, but particularly some of the things that you know, Bill and Carrie discussed were very interesting. Some were a little bit disturbing in terms of some of the things that they said that were not looking real good. And if some of the folks recall, they talked about like something happening in the first possible week or second week of October, and that
right
that
around was, the 7th.
Yeah, and you know, they have their own theory about what happened at Roswell, and it's all tied in with what happened at Roswell and how essentially the military got a hold of the device that that was brought back on that ship. And according to the research that Project Camelot has done, is they feel that that ship came back as a humanitarian act from our future. And it crashed because of radar installation. I don't know whether it was beaming out waves or whatever happened, but nonetheless, the craft crashed, and our military got a hold of a device that they used, sort of like a guidance system to get them through time. And when our military folks, remember, you know, this is circa 1947, when they started messing with that, they upset the timelines pretty dramatically. And if you're familiar with quantum physics, there's multiple timelines. And so what we've got on our hands is a situation where various factions are trying to control that timeline and get it corrected again.
Yeah, now that device that they got from Roswell, that's not the looking glass device. That's actually purportedly the device that allowed them to travel. Did I understand that correctly?
Yeah, and you know, I've heard in various reports and part of UFO mythology is that that the various officials from the government actually could look back into certain points in time with that. So let's say, for instance, according to mythology, if you wanted to look and see what it was like in the Cretaceous or the Jurassic, you could look through that little glass and you could actually see, you know, dinosaurs or pterodactyls or whatever. But it really turned out to be quite a mess, according to their hypothesis. And, you know, it's the different folks are trying to kind of put the pieces of the puzzle together. And without divulging or disclosing, we had a very interesting call after the show, didn't we not, Doug?
Yes. One of the people from their website it called us. They'd found out about the broadcast. One of the people that they had interviewed extensively had called us. He called me on Skype, thinking that was how to, I guess, tune into the show. And we had an interesting talk and didn't really, you know, well, it didn't really go too far, but we did invite him to, if he felt comfortable or felt the need, that we'd be happy to also relay some of the different things that, in his experience. So it was an interesting thing. I mean, it was unexpected, and he had the full support of Bill and Carrie as well. And I'd like to mention, too, that last week we really appreciate everyone being on. And we had, we made records last week, record listeners. We had 325 listeners, which is a new high. And we've already, in 1 week, had over 650 downloads of that show. Now, I realized that starting out, we had some, on my end, I had some mic problems. And that was due to us last few seconds switch from Uvu to Skype because of the, couldn't call them on Uvu. At any rate, amazing show, a lot of listeners, a lot of feedback. One of the things, too, I guess, Grant, that I wanted to touch on is, you know, we hear some of these stories regarding the doom and gloom, the 2012 issues, and, you know, now October. That, you know, this is not necessarily Bill and Carrie saying that something's going to happen in October. This is their people, right? The people that are
right, absolutely.
They've been interviewing.
Their contacts and the folks. I thought one of the scarier things was talking about, you know, most folks are certainly acutely aware now of what's been going on in Eastern Europe, in Georgia, and a few of those places. And I guess for me personally, the most scary part was some of the contacts telling them that we're kind of getting ready to ramp things up in Georgia again or stage an attack on Iran, which would, in my estimation, be pretty catastrophic and, you know, would not be to the benefit of all parties involved, that's for sure. So that was one of the things that they talked about, too, and that was really kind of a scary thought. But, you know, Sharon in the chat room asked us a question in regards to the crystal or the looking glass
cube.
And the cube. And basically, you know, Sharon, what we discussed is what we know at this point in time, and supposedly it was kind of like the guidance system to help the humans from the future get back. And, you know, because those humans from the future were involved in the crash, and supposedly I think only one survived.
Allegedly.
That device fell into the hands of the military, and we all know how wonderful the military is with weapons. They have a long history of disastrous results when the military gets their hands on things because they don't seem to do a real good job with it.
Yeah, they
so
don't.
It was kind of scary, but nonetheless, also very fascinating. And I think the one of the things, much to Bill and and Carrie's credit is they did not, it wasn't all total gloom and doom. It, you know, they very much stated that, you know, we are in charge to some degree of changing the timeline through, you know, in ways heightening our consciousness, working together. And they also talked about the good guys, the guys with the white hats. And that's good to know.
Yes, it is.
Really, you know, trying to help us out. And
yeah,
it's kind of scary, too, when they started talking about, you know, the folks in the Third World Order and, you know, the Bilderbergers and the Illuminati and how it was all kind of tied in together.
You know, that's the thing that I have a real hard time reconciling, I guess, is maybe the best word to use, is you hear these stories, these whistleblowers with these behind-the-scenes folks who seem to have some inside information, and it's rarely real bright news. It's the government's done this, you know, it's the ETs have done that, the reptilians done this, you know, that it's, and that, I guess what really confuses me, or confounds me, maybe a better word, is that it seemingly comes from credible people, you know, these scientists who are up in the top secret clearance thing and are around it, and yet, you know, I mean, I wonder. I mean, would it behoove one of these people to just start jacking us around? You know, could it be that? I mean, it's hard to verify. Of course, Bill and Carrie do strive to verify who they're talking with.
You know, what it always makes me kind of think of, because I'm kind of skeptical my old age, is that it's hard to separate the wheat from the chaff here, because there may be spinning a lot of disinformation to send researchers off on scurrying around in a lot of different paths. And I think that historically, most people who have been involved in UFO research have, you know, been fed a lot of disinformation, and of course the community is pretty hip to it now, and you know, we really try to be very careful, you know, and network with each other so that we can cross verify. I think, you know, my personal opinion is I think that there may be some disinformation that's being spread for whatever purpose. Maybe it's just to lead us on a blind alley, but who really knows?
Well, I hope not. You know, and I, one of the things that occurs to me is that how, you know, and this is where all the confusion comes in, is that what if the government was up to their games? What if there is actually a scientist or an operative, if you will, and, you know, they're basically feeding disinformation? You know, what if? You know, under the guise that
remember,
it's real.
If you remember too, Doug, historically, that when the CIA and our government were back in the 1960s, actually earlier in the 1950s, were developing the I'm trying to remember the name of it, the aircraft now. Help me out here, Doug. It was a spy aircraft, the forerunner of the Blackbird.
The U-2.
And a lot of people, a lot of citizens at that time actually saw it, because everybody, if you're not familiar, it was a very high-altitude jet. And a lot of people saw it, and they reported it to the, you know where it flew to various authorities. And, of course, the authorities at the time were perfectly happy to let rumors run wild or swirl that what they had seen was a UFO, because what better cover could you ask for?
Yeah. Well, it is.
It's
an excellent cover.
They certainly weren't going to step forward and say it was a U-2, a spy plane.
Yeah, it's an excellent cover. And, of course, who knows what they have now. I mean, Blackbird, and then they've got presumably Aurora, and who else knows what else. So, you know, that's the problem with this whole field, is that you just never know what's real and what's not. It's a perfect way to confuse and confound and control. And that's happening in this entire field, and that's one of the things that I think many of us are trying to cut through the chaff and get to that stuff. But it's very difficult when you've got so much that's Some may be real, some may not be real. Let's talk, a related kind of sort of maybe possibly topic is the Chinese spacecraft. Talking about that.
Hey, the
Chinese, tell us about that.
For folks who may not be aware of it, you know, China's making some pretty good advances. I would say that they're probably where we were in about 1965 or 66 with Gemini, when, you know, we were first in that part of the space program. What was critical was docking maneuvers in space, and with the whole concept being that if we're going to go to the moon in the time frame that President Kennedy wants to go there, we had to be able to successfully, you know, dock with the lunar lander module in order to produce it. And the Chinese are starting to do that right now, or that's going to be part of this this venture that they're having right now. And also one of their astronauts is going to actually do a spacewalk. So for them, that's very critical. And, you know, it's a much credit to the Chinese for, trying to get their space act together. And, like any other spacefaring nation in its infancy, they're going through the same steps that the United States did many, many years ago. So I would encourage everybody to follow it. It's going to be a short trip. But remember this, folks, the first time that Alexei Leonov stepped out of the Soviet capsule, I don't know if everybody's aware of this, what they forgot was that there was going to be a change in atmospheric pressure from that capsule. So when Leonov stepped off into space, his spacesuit actually expanded considerably. So that it expanded so much that he couldn't get back into the space capsule. And he was stuck in the capsule, on the outside door of the capsule, and he slowly had to release air out of the spacesuit so that he could actually squeeze himself back into the point where it was dangerously low. Now talk about, you know, a situation that's fraught with danger. There was one right there. So Chinese being fledglings, we certainly wish them the very best and hope that they don't run into the same sort of problems. But, you know, space is inherently dangerous. A lot of folks don't really realize that. Even for our shuttle astronauts. And also, if folks don't also, here's another thing, if folks aren't aware of it, we're fixing to get ready to go up there and fix that Hubble satellite, the Hubble Space Telescope. And if you haven't been following the news lately, we have two shuttles out on the launch pad right now. Now, recently, because of the storm that's heading up to the Carolinas, NASA's moved one of them back. But we have Atlantis and, I think, Endeavour. Now, the reason why we have two shuttles on the pad is because the altitude of the Hubble Space Telescope is way up there, okay? And there's limited fuel on the shuttle. Plus, here's the thing that I thought very interesting, and I'm sure our audience will agree, is that in that particular area where the Hubble Space Telescope is at, there's a tremendous amount of debris. You know, bolts, all kinds of stuff flying around up there. And one of the concerns that NASA has is that if that spacecraft, if something hits the space shuttle at that altitude, you know, they may not be able to make it back to the space station. So that's why they're readying the other shuttle for the rescue mission.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
There's a question in chat from the Enlightened One. If you might know something about this or have a position on China Space Technologies, it's going to implicate things with NASA or complicate perhaps. Are there any consequences that will result from this?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that I found kind of disappointing was the Chinese kind of reached out to NASA in terms of wanting to work cooperatively with us, and NASA has really kind of snubbed them. And so I don't know what the implications will be. I think NASA is probably watching them very closely. Because the Chinese have made no qualms about saying that they want to have their own space station in orbit by 2015. And, I would think that NASA is watching carefully. And I think it's kind of unfortunate because when it comes to space, you know, I guess there's a part of me, the romantic part of me, always wants to think of it in the Star Trek-esque sort of form where we use space for the cooperation of all mankind, as opposed to militarizing it. So from that standpoint, you know, I'm hoping that things will work out, and maybe They will at times, and maybe NASA's kind of thumbing their nose at them because, you know, they are kind of backwards. And, you know, like I said, they're probably about 20 years behind us as far as the technology and the state of knowledge.
You know, there's an interesting, what should I call it, argument or whatever, from the chat room, talking about what's space travel seriously done for us? Has it helped sickness? Has it helped us, humanity in any way? Do you have any thoughts on that, Grant?
Well, I think that there's been some really interesting results of space travel. I think that a lot of people really don't realize how dangerous it is. And from a standpoint of physical medicine and human beings in space, I think there's been a tremendous knowledge base built up there. I think that also there's been some interesting experiments done with metallurgy up in space, that in space in a zero gravity, that you can create alloys and different types of metallurgical compounds that they can't do out here on Earth because of the fact that there's zero gravity.
Right.
But I think that that any time that we go into a new endeavor like this, folks have the right to ask that question, and mm-hmm. it's a good question because. But I would, in defense of NASA, I would say, and without getting too political, I'll stand up on my soapbox here and then quickly climb down. Perhaps if we took $700 billion and you know put a quarter of that into you know. Taking care of our infrastructure, providing health care for folks in the United States or doing something like that, then maybe folks wouldn't be so concerned about the small amount of money that does go to NASA, because it's not where it should be, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we're setting priorities.
Yeah, and I'm going to climb up on my soapbox for a moment, too. You know, as far as should we be spending money for space exploration, the answer, in my opinion, is yes. Next question. Should we be spending money for a pointless war with Iraq that was basically launched on lies and pretense and taking that money instead? Think of what the good we could have done with that money, not just for the United States, but for the entire world. I mean, how many billions and billions or even over $1 trillion, I don't know what it is now, that we've sent on this kind of BS, you know, the little boys in their sandbox all fighting for a corner. And, you know, that's the thing. That's the area where we need to stop. We need to stop fighting with each other, and we need to start working to help all humanity. You know, like Thomas Paine said, the world is my country, to do good is my religion. And you know, so people say, well, we shouldn't be spending money for space. Well, you know what? We'd have the money to spend for space if we wouldn't spend it foolishly elsewhere. And you're right, Grant. There has been experiments, ongoing experiments that are done in space, taking advantage of zero gravity, that are helping medicine. It is helping medicine and helping humanity.
Advancements, yeah. And, you know, I think people lose sight of the fact that, you know, for the most part, there is an international effort in space and that, you know, there is cooperation. But also, you know, we're explorers by nature. We've been explorers.
Yes.
Is into exploration since we were in the caves. We always wanted to know what was over the next hill. And there was an interesting article today on the Internet that a lot of – this is NASA, by the way's 50th anniversary. And you know, they're trying to switch gears and find a new mission and decide what they're going to do for the next 50 years. And you know, it's something we have to think about very carefully, and we have to take it one step at a time. But I think that you know, when we can work cooperatively and take the high ground, which we literally have, it brings us all together here because. I don't know how many folks in our audience are old enough to remember the moon landing, but, you know, a lot of that united the world. The whole world was absolutely excited and enthusiastic about space travel. And for one brief period of time, everybody forgot about nationalism and was focused on the fact that man had walked on the moon. Even if it was a brief time, it was exhilarating.
Yes, it was. everybody all around the world pasted to their TV sets, you know, trying to get in on it. I remember that. You know, I was actually in Vancouver, Canada. Yeah, I was in Vancouver, Canada with my family. I was 9 years old.
Yeah.
Or 10,
and
one of those two. No, I was 10 years old.
I can see in the chat room here some folks are talking about, you know, our expenditures. And, you know, the real issue is that, you know, we need to prioritize on what we spend our money on. And, you know, I think one of the questions was there's a lot of money spent in prisons. Well, that's a really good point. And, you know, most folks really don't realize that most of the people that are in prisons are people who are drug offenders. We're not putting away people who are heavy-duty criminals. Most of those people are nonviolent offenders, and, you know, we're not doing a lot to rehabilitate them. That's what they should be. They should be rehabilitated rather than incarcerated. Seems like we've got the saddle backwards on that horse.
Yeah.
But, you know,
all right, so let's
let's
pick up what we were going to talk about as well on near-death experiences. And, you know, Grant's going to be doing an interesting presentation at the Paranexus Conference here in October, on October 25th in Tampa, on apparition or hallucination. And, you know, you've got quite a bit of knowledge, Grant, on NDEs, near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, and so forth. What's your take on the whole thing?
Well, you know, I've been doing research. I really piqued my interest back in the 1980s. I was working in hospitals and talking with a lot of the nurses. And it was just casual chat. I would hear them account or tell tales of deathbed visions by folks or people who had died and had been resuscitated, and they would pull them aside very quietly, you know, and tell them what they had experienced. And so it really kind of piqued my interest, and that was with the early days of near-death research. And, you know, it's really come a long way. But to answer your question, Doug, I think what we're really after here, or what we're really starting to dig into, is what is the nature of consciousness. And once again, the medical community has come together to really kind of redefine what the essence or the nature of death is. And for those folks who you can access Time Magazine online, and they had a wonderful article recently within the last 2 days by Dr. Samuel Parnia, who's one of the foremost researchers and is heading up the new research. And he was talking basically about, you know, some real fascinating stuff with some medications that may, you know, keep a person almost in like a suspended state and really retard the death process as we know it. But I really think that we're going to have to redefine consciousness.
You got any ideas on what it is?
Well, you know, you know, I think that there's a link between consciousness and quantum physics somehow. Because how else could you explain the fact that, you know, when a person physiologically goes through the process of death, you know, your organs shut down, your brain shuts down, and after a certain period of time, you know, after about 5 minutes, technically, you know, without oxygen, without, you know, if you're in cardiac arrest, for all practical purposes, by the current definition, you're dead. And so if that's going on, how can you possibly explain the fact that somebody would be cognizant of processes that are going on in the room around them? I'll give you an example. There's a very famous case, I believe it was from the work of Dr. Pim van Lommel. There was this research study done in the Netherlands in about 2002, and it was in the British Lancet, which is a very distinguished medical journal out of Britain. And one of the incidents was a gentleman who had come into the hospital in full cardiac arrest. And if, for our medical professional in the audience, if you know they have him on a crash cart where they're you know, going to electrically stimulate his heart, and part of the process is if an older person comes in, you're going to take their dentures out, because the one thing you don't want to do is have them, you know, gagging on their dentures, making it worse. And in this particular case, this gentleman, for all practical purposes, was clinically dead, but they were going to do the best they could to resuscitate him. So one of the nurses took out his dentures, and she put it in the crash cart. Now, they managed to successfully revive this patient, and several weeks later, the nurse was walking around in the hospital, and I guess had come onto his floor, and the patient said to her, hey, I know you. You're the nurse that took my dentures out and put them in the crash cart. You know, he may not have said crash cart, but put them in the cart. So the thing that I find so tantalizing about that is, how could that possibly happen? Physiologically, from a physical standpoint, his body had shut down. So if he was still conscious and could see those activities going on around him, then how do we explain that? How, you know, that means that his consciousness transcended the physical. And
that's amazing.
And if that,
I mean, that's as much a circumstantial proof as figuring out that there's a planet several light years away orbiting around a star that we can't see. I mean, we can see the star, but we can't see the planet. But we do know it's there because of the wobble of the star. That's circumstantial evidence. We can't see the planet. We know it's there. What's the difference?
Well, you know, it's very tantalizing stuff, and that's what the scientists are focusing on now. You know, hopefully they're going to get some answers here because, like I said, at the very least, we're going to get a redefinition of what constitutes death because, you know, we really don't know. I believe it's Dr. Peter Fenwick or it may be Dr. Van Lommel. You know, they have basically said in a very simplified manner is that while we're alive, the quantum process that works in our brains is like a radio, and that, you know, let's just assume that in the life state we're picking up AM signals, but at the transcendent point when we move from life to death, those radio frequencies are heightened, so we move into FM. And that's a fascinating concept, and you know, I don't have a great command over quantum physics to explain it to our audience, and I would certainly encourage them if they find this topic interesting to go to the International Association of Near-Death Studies. They have a website where they have actual accounts, and also they post articles from Dr. Van Lommel and Dr. Peter Fenwick, who is a neuropsychiatrist. Which means they actually study the neurological components involved in synaptic transmissions and those sort of things. So it's very technical stuff, and he has a real excellent article on their website, which isn't so technical that folks it's going to scare folks off. Quite the contrary, it's very readable and very interesting. Plus, the site provides a number of firsthand experiences. And, you know, the near-death experience, for folks who may not be familiar, is not a new phenomenon. This is something that's been recorded way, way back. Plato recorded the story of a soldier by the name of Ur who had been wounded on the battlefield and had a near-death experience, and it's been well recorded throughout history. It's not something.
Well, when we come back from our break, our last break for the evening, we're going to continue our discussion on NDEs, and especially the area of apparition or hallucination, especially for paranormal researchers. How do you know? How can you tell? What are some insights? And if you've had a near-death experience and you'd like to share it, our number is right there on the screen, 347-845-7799. Give us a call. There's also a click-to-talk button on your screen. If you've got a headset on your computer, you can click on that, type in your name, I believe, and you'll connect to us, and that's a free call. Anyway, hang with us, folks. We've got the last segment coming up, and we'll be right back.
Thank you. West Georgia Paranormal Research Society is composed of individuals with a common goal, the scientific investigation of the paranormal. It is our hope that these investigations will allow those of us in the paranormal community to bring about answers that will benefit us, as well as helping to educate the general public. We approach all investigations and questions with the utmost professionalism and confidentiality required for the situation. If you are experiencing strange occurrences around your home or place of business, such as unexplained noises, smells, or visual phenomenon, these could be possible signs of paranormal activity. If you're interested in finding some answers to these questions, or if you'd like to have our team investigate the activity, visit us at www.wgprs.com for more information. Research, assistance, understanding. We're here to help you.
Where will you find a professional association of paranormal researchers?
Paranexus.org.
Where can you get research training, share data, and network with other researchers?
Paranexus.org.
Where will you find a set of international standards for paranormal research groups?
Paranexus.org.
Paranexus is a global professional association of progressive paranormal investigators, parapsychologists, cryptozoologists, ufologists, and psychically gifted individuals focused on understanding the human condition through the scientific study of paranormal and psychical phenomena. And coming October 2008 to Tampa, Florida, the Paranexus Conference, a learning and networking event unlike any you've attended. Join us for two full days of innovative paranormal workshops. Participate in the Paranexus Challenge, where several teams will investigate a secret haunted location. Observe a live table tipping seance at the stroke of midnight. Join us for the Spirits and Shadows Costume Ball. See old friends, meet new friends, win prizes, and have fun.
Paranexus.org.
A place to learn, a place to share, a place to network, a place to come together. Join us now at Paranexus.org.
Hey, we're back. Welcome, everybody. We really appreciate you taking your time to join us tonight. We've been talking about a number of interesting things, including, well, astral projection, lucid dreaming. We've been talking about near-death experiences and Project Camelot. Interestingly, if you missed it, we had the most listeners we've ever had last week, 325, over 650 downloads. And I just, during the show, got an email newsletter from Project Camelot. They're listing their different appearances and so forth, and they said that their interview last week was the best one they've ever done. That's on their website, too, so I appreciate that from them. And there was a portion of it that was not recorded due to a Blog Talk Radio issue, but most of it's there, so go take a look at paranexradio.org, and you can listen to the archive there. We also want to mention that we've got some interesting guests coming up. Real quick. Now, next week we've had a cancellation, so, you know, that's open. If you know of somebody that we should have on this show, let us know. Let them know. Next Thursday we've got an opening. And then after that, we've got some interesting shows. On October 9th, Excursions into the Unknown with Dale Kaczmarek. And then on October 16th, and this is one that you'll really want to take note of, is we're going to have Dr. David M. Jacobs on Alien Abduction Agenda. Now, he's one of the foremost researchers in alien abduction phenomena, along with Bud Hopkins. We're really looking forward to having him on. I know, Grant, you arranged that, and that's really great. Let's see.
Pretty excited about it.
Yeah, October 23rd, we're not going to have a show. That's Thursday, just before the Paranexus Conference. That week, we will not have a show. The week after, we've got Scott Marlowe, who's a cryptozoologist with the Pangea Institute. He's going to be on. He's got his own radio show as well. we're looking forward to that. Now, Grant, we were talking about apparition of hallucination and kind of steering this to paranormal research, paranormal investigations. You got a client who thinks they've seen something. One of the big things, and we talked about this on previous shows, one of the things we really have to try to determine is whether we're dealing with something paranormal or something psychological. And that's going to be the point of your presentation at the conference, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What we started this originally as part of our own internal training for the CIRT team, and I've just kind of beefed it up a little bit because I got such a good response to it. Basically, the whole purpose was to try, as folks already know, and you alluded to earlier, Doug, we're big into education, and once again, I'd like to encourage the folks to visit our Paranexus Academy. And you know, if you feel that you've got the skills to, you know, to teach a course, we'd certainly like to talk to you and have you participate. But one of the concerns that we shared, you and I, Doug, was the fact that we see a lot of underlying psychological issues. But the original intent of the course was to be a primer, so to speak, for paranormal investigators to recognize pretty much characteristics in potential clients that would set off red flags. And the whole basis of the presentation is that, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to be able to pick up on some of these things. And so what I try to do is try to help folks differentiate or look for warning signs when they're getting involved in the very beginning, at the front end of the investigation. If you recall, Doug, when we had Annalisa on from public parapsychology, they talked about a public experiment that they did in a very academic setting, and that they had to actually shut down after they got going because they came to the realization that the folks who were saying that they were experiencing paranormal activity also had some real heavy-duty substance abuse issues. And that's exactly the sort of thing that the presentation is designed to help you avoid. Because in our evolution as investigators, we strongly use a much different approach than when I first came on board in terms of that you and I really kind of formulated and solidified in the fact that we go in with a very small group of folks, and when we sit down, we let the client do a lot of talking, and we really try to pick up on some cues there. And my presentation basically covers some of the things to look out for, some of the characteristics of psychiatric disorders that easily can be picked up by the serious paranormal investigator.
Right. And a lot of them are
intense.
And a lot of these things are not that hard to determine. I mean, I talked about this on the radio a week or two ago, but it's the whole process for researchers to do no harm. You know, there's this one case that a particular group went in, and the family was strongly religious, and by the time this group was done, they convinced them they had a demon and that they needed an exorcism. And in the shadows, one of our, well, actually our group, co-founder Paranexus, they went in and determined that everything that was happening could be explained and was really a psychological basis. So it wasn't what they thought. And that's important. You've got to look beyond that. And I'm not going to keep beating that every show, but it's so important for researchers to really rule that out. Substance abuse issues, alcoholism, drug abuse, other affective disorders that you're not saying you have to be a psychologist, but it'd be nice to have one on your team. But you can look for the dysfunction. That's the point. And it's often visible in a lack of order or too much order. I mean, I've seen it both ways. The home, you go in the home and it's a complete utter mess. The other side of it is it's a complete, absolutely picture-perfect home and gardens home. And, you know, you can kind of get a feel. So just bear that in mind. One of the other things that we invited our listeners to do as well is if you had a near-death experience that you could call in, and if you'd like to do that, we'd love to hear from you. Numbers there on your screen, 347-945-7799. I'm going to paste it in the chat room if you'd like to call. You can also click on your click the talk button there on the page for listening. The interesting thing,
too,
and we
folks,
just,
the other thing, sorry, to be
go ahead, Grant.
I was going to say is basically that, you know, if you feel that you'd be a good guest, all you have to do is get in touch with Doug or myself. The information on where to contact us is there, and we'd be happy to talk to you because there's a lot of folks out there in our audience that, you know, of course, we all share common interests. But, you know, even if you didn't really agree with us about our particular technique, one of the beauties of Paranexus is that there's room for everybody at the table, and we will give you the form to come in here and espouse what you feel what might be a better approach or what your particular point is. So, you know, we encourage you, and, you know, hopefully we project to our audience the fact that we have a pretty friendly forum and that, you know, your viewpoint is welcome. So I would encourage everybody that's interested and that listens to us, if there's a topic that you feel that you have some expertise on, give us a call. We'd be happy to talk to you about, you know, guest appearance because from time to time, you know, we do have guests that, you know, they something comes up, an emergency, or they have double booked, and so, you know, they may not be available, and, you know, we could slide you in, but we'd be happy to book you if you...
Yeah, for a portion, anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, here's a question in the chat room for you. Why, when someone goes through a near-death experience, the first thing they see flashbacks of their life experiences might trigger this phenomena? Any thoughts on that?
Well, that's not always the case. It's pretty individualized as to what people experience. Some people have the feeling of going through a tunnel. In different cultures, some people think that they enter the entrance to a cave. That usually happens in Asian cultures. Sometimes they feel that as they get close to death, that they see members of their family that are there to help them kind of cross over. But in some cases, some people are actually meet a being, what they perceive as a being of light. And that being of light sometimes will show them in a fraction of a second a panoramic view of their life, like a life review. And one of the most fascinating things about that life review, and enlightened one, that was a great question. One of the most fascinating things about that life review is they get to perceive their interactions with a person from that other person's point of view. Say, for instance, you said an unkind word to somebody during a particular incident or did something that you weren't particularly proud of. You get to feel what that person felt by your actions. And it's not something that they come back saying has been to punish them, but has been to actually try to get them to have an epiphany about their own behavior and how they could have corrected it. So it's really, although there's a lot of similarities with the near-death experience, it's sometimes very individualized. So one size really doesn't fit all. But a great question.
You know, that leads us right back to the nature of consciousness, too, in a way. Because think about it. Number one, we don't know where the mind is. We pretty much, I think, we know that it's non-local. It's not, your brain is not your mind. Your brain is your brain. Your mind, we don't know where it is. It's non-local. So, and there's a lot of evidence to support that conclusion. So think about this. Tying that back into the nature of consciousness and the human mind, which I believe is unbelievably powerful. That story, the example you were just using, Grant, they have this near-death experience or they have this vision of somebody they may have said something untoward to. How do you like that one? Untoward to.
I like it. There you go. That's good.
Yeah, it's my grammar. But they said something mean to somebody, and now they're having an opportunity to address that. Mm-hmm. How can we say that that's not the mind working or resolving an issue in and of itself without the other person actually being there?
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. But even what is even more fascinating is the people that have the deepest, what they call core experience, that come closest to death and then are resuscitated, they've done longitudinal studies for up to 8 years after they've had their experience. And what's remarkable about it is those folks, even if they had some sort of real serious religious inclination, have this conversion sort of to more of a spiritual nature, and have found, some of them have gone back to work helping other people, but they generally have a total different perception about the purpose of them being in this plane of existence. And that's one of the things that is really remarkable about the experience. And once again, I can't speak highly enough about the International Association of Near-Death Studies, because they point that out repeatedly in a lot of the data that they have posted on their website.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. Now, there's a question from Sharon in the chat room. During hypnosis, how are hidden areas of the mind accessed? Hypnosis is another amazing phenomena, and it happens to us all the time and every day. In fact, we go in and out of hypnosis a number of times through the day. If you've ever missed an exit while I'm driving down the road because you were deep in thought, that's hypnosis, actually. You've probably seen this with kids or maybe experienced it yourself. You're watching TV, and you literally get hypnotized by it. In fact, somebody walks in the room, and you don't even know that they're in there, or they left the room and you don't even know. That's hypnosis. Really, hypnosis is just focusing your mind on something. And hypnosis is all about you controlling you. Now, there is such a thing as stage hypnosis. That's what we see on TV. And you got to keep in mind that these people who are out there talking to their phone like it's, or their shoe like it's a cell phone, or quacking like a duck, they're all willing participants in that. You cannot ask somebody under hypnosis to go rob a bank for you, because the moral code, the moral compass, the value systems kick in, and you would not do anything under hypnosis that you wouldn't do otherwise. Now, that's hypnosis. There is another aspect to it called brainwashing, but that's much more intense and takes a lot more time, whole different animal. But hypnosis, I've done a number of regressions. I'm a certified hypnotist. A number of regressions with, especially with alien abduction phenomena, which have been successful. And it's important to put this into focus, or into perspective, I should say. Number one, when you're doing hypnosis, the person is relaxed, and their conscious mind essentially goes to play, so to speak. If you think of hypnosis just like that hypnagogic state, the alpha state, just between sleep and awake, that's where we aim for, right in that place where you're not asleep, not awake. And that's where a lot of the vivid imagery can come through, and that talk about lucid dreaming, that's one of the times when we probably dream the most lucidly, if that's a word. As far as accessing hidden areas of the mind, there's a variety of techniques. In fact, the beautiful thing about hypnosis is it's all visualization. So you can create, as a hypnotist, I can create a number of ways of accessing that. Now, some folks will, some hypnotists that is, will create some sort of a timeline, and the person can go back in time to an event in their life. One of the things that I use a lot that I came up with is the archives of the mind. And so after I relax somebody and done the induction, which is the deepening of the relaxation process, I have them go down a beautiful staircase of their own creation. 10 steps, takes them down deeper. The bottom of the staircase are two beautiful wooden doors of their own design and creation. I want them to work it out. These doors, behind these two doors, is the archives of their mind, where there's hundreds and hundreds of books and bookshelves and everything, and it records every experience, every thought, everything from their lives. And what I have them do is I have them go in there, and they are particularly drawn to a particular bookcase and a book, and I have them go and take it off the shelf, have them set it on the table in front of them, have them look at the cover, tell me what it says, and they do. And then I have them open it and say that they can instantly recall anything that's important to their current, present-day life now. This is the whole thing behind it. And so they do, and we've had some great results with that, some amazing results. Now, back to the perspective. Just because it comes out in hypnosis does not necessarily mean that it's gospel. The mind is a powerful thing. We certainly don't understand it yet. But it does allow a person to remember things that they may have forgotten. It does allow a person to go back. And you got to really look at it as a whole, as to know how much credence to give it. You really
do. You know, Doug, if I could just interrupt you for a second.
Sure.
I think a lot of people, what they do, and I think you really touched base on it, is they mix up therapeutic hypnosis with stage hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as a mental health counselor, I've seen people that have been hypnotized where they won't feel pain. And
right,
and
that's easy.
For a minute, we can't forget the fact that hypnosis can be a very therapeutic tool in helping people that have experienced trauma. Matter of fact, you know, if folks are familiar with the Betty and Barney Hill abduction case,
mm-hmm.
the hypnotist in that case had worked extensively with soldiers that were traumatized during World War II and had a very high success rate in helping them resolve things because, as Doug kind of discussed, you can bring people back and help them work through those very traumatic events by helping them kind of distance themselves emotionally from the events that surrounded them.
Yes.
So that you put them in the position
yes.
of being an observer. As opposed
right.
to actually, and it mm-hmm. can be very, very therapeutic in helping folks work things out. And, you know, we're very fortunate to have Doug on our Nexus list because, you know, his abilities to help people during regression are he's a very skilled hypnotist. And, you know, it's always a pleasure.
Thank
to work
you,
with
man.
Because
pay you later, man.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, we're going to get rich anyway, folks. Somebody told us
to
send us a chunk of money.
Yeah, right. Okay, so we're coming down to our last minute. Real quick, is hypnosis a long-term solution? It can be depending on what's the deal is. One of the things I always do is ego strengthening or self-esteem building in all of my sessions, which helps a lot. And I hate to rush this. I would actually love to talk about this much more. Maybe we will on a future show. I am going to post a course in ParanexusAcademy.org, Introduction to Hypnosis, which might answer a lot of anybody's questions on this. So take a look at that. That'll be posted tomorrow on ParanexusAcademy.org, and you can get an introduction. There's a lot of things, tips, tricks you need to know, such as not leading the subject and so forth, which is very, very important. Folks, we really appreciate you taking your time tonight listening to the show. Next week, we will announce who the guest will be. If you know somebody who'd like to be on our show, we have a last-minute cancellation here, so we've got that to deal with. The week after, we have Dale Kaczmarek with Excursions into the Unknown. The week after that, on October 16th, Alien Abduction Agenda with Dr. David M. Jacobs. You won't want to miss that one. He's one of the foremost leading researchers in alien abduction phenomena. Then after that, we've got the Paranex Conference. Don't forget about that. We've got less than a month. So if you're planning on going, please register and you'll get an extension on your Paranexus membership, which is $30 value. It's a year extension up until October 15th. We'd love to see you in Tampa on the 25th of October. Grant, it's been real, man, always. You're very knowledgeable. I always enjoy talking to you about this stuff. And folks,
a pleasure. And, you know, we really appreciate our audience. You folks are great.
Yeah.
And we love the feedback we get from you. And we wouldn't be anywhere without you. So y'all have a great weekend. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Take care, folks. Have a great night.